News broke this week. In fact, I just saw it today that ESPN asked Oklahoma to move their home opener to a Friday night, August 30th. They're playing Temple. So the Oklahoma home opener, which they play a lot of 11 a.m. games, really early games, they moved it to Friday night, August 30th. I was incredibly disappointed by this news because Friday nights belong to what, Darren?
High school football.
It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast.
Hey, welcome back, sports fans. We're glad you've tuned in for another episode of the show. I'm here with my co-host, Darren Shavers. Good to see you again, Darren.
Good to see you, Ben.
And I see you're gloating a little bit too much today.
It's a little bit of a Vanderbilt. This is specifically a baseball hat. Just saying. Just throwing it out there.
Well, my mama taught me it's always best just to rip the Band-Aid off.
There might be something to that, yeah.
So let's just jump into this week's AP Top 25 College Baseball poll, where there's not any purple and gold this year or this week. But
this week.
Arkansas, we're going to talk a lot about Arkansas tonight.
Oh, my goodness.
They're holding on to that number one position. The Aggies, number three. The Volunteers at four. Your Commodores at number six.
Moved up a spot because they won two out of three. All right, keep going. I'm good.
I don't think LSU's won a SEC series yet this year.
I don't think they have. I think that's why they – I think that's that to me, single-handedly, is why they dropped completely out of the top 25 at this one. Because, honestly, even though Vanderbilt's having a good year and it been in the top 10, this has typically been a spot – where you play another top 25 team, you're on the road, that Vanderbilt slips up and can lose a series. So I think there was some expectation that LSU would perform a little bit better, and it looked kind of the same. So,
yeah, might be time to get the team together and watch Major League.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's a great idea.
Mississippi State at 22, Florida 24, and Alabama at 25. That's your updated college baseball poll for this week, and obviously there's more that you want to say, so go ahead.
Well, in fairness,
wait, let me get the salt for you.
No, I'm going a totally different direction. I'm actually trying to help the wound a little bit. In fairness, LSU is not the only SEC team that dropped out of the top 25 this week. South Carolina did as well. South Carolina dropped out of the top 25 this week as well, so they were not the only team.
Thank you for your attempt at
consolation.
In other news, for the first time ever in history, the women's national championship game had more viewers than the men's. The matchup featuring South Carolina versus Iowa had a record 18.9 million viewers. Wow. The men's game featuring Connecticut versus Purdue had 14.8 million. So two games that we wish they'd been a little closer. South Carolina ended up winning 87-75, 12-point victory, and then UConn pulled away from Purdue in the second half for a 75-60 victory. UConn's second title in a row, and South Carolina's second in 3 years. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So that's three straight years for the SEC.
Yep. And, you know, the interesting thing, if you look at all three of those years, kind of the way the story has played out is you've got LSU and and South Carolina at the top of the women's game in the SEC. And whoever encountered Iowa first lost that game. And then whoever encountered Iowa second won the game. So just kind of an interesting dichotomy of how that, or I guess not really dichotomy, kind of an interesting parallel in those stories of how it happened, at least the last 2 years, with those three schools kind of being intermingled. So, and the same thing played out this year. South Carolina plays Iowa after Iowa defeats LSU, and you have a South Carolina championship.
That's a great point. And one of the things that hit me looking at the tournament this year was Iowa had a chip on its shoulder. They wanted mm-hmm. to beat LSU. They wanted to beat Connecticut because evidently mm-hmm. Caitlin Clark at one point in her career wanted to go to Connecticut and they weren't interested in her. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to beat UConn. But then the one team that had a chip on its shoulder toward Iowa was South Carolina after exactly. that defeat last year.
Yep. There were some great storylines, and you heard it talked about throughout the tournament. Things happening that grab people's attention and make people go, I want to watch these games. Far and away, the women's game led the pack this year in that compared to the men's game. Far and away, there were so many storylines. And I'm not even talking about some of the other stuff we talked about. I'm just on the floor in play. There were so many storylines. It was just like, I can't wait to watch this game. Like we said, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I made this point, or it may have been last week, the amount of people that I have talked to about the women's college basketball game over the last 3 weeks, that some of them I didn't have a sports conversation with, much less women's basketball within that sports. And now here we are talking about women's college basketball. It's really been incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And kudos to Dawn Staley, who mm-hmm. pretty much is cementing her place at the top of coaches
absolutely.
In women's basketball. I love Coach Mulkey and support her, but right now it's hard to argue against Coach Staley.
Absolutely.
What she is continuing to do at South Carolina.
And you know, one of the things I enjoyed about seeing that win Sunday was post-game. There's so much talk about what the college game has become with NIL and transfer. To see a coach show the amount of motion that she showed immediately after the game was over in that post-game, that positive emotion, just that being overcome by this team accomplished so much. That was really cool to see. That was fun to see her as a coach kind of have and express that emotion. It was very fun to see.
Yeah, most definitely. Congratulations to South Carolina.
Yep.
An undefeated season ending in a national championship.
Very nice.
Now, from congratulations, we go to scolding. And we're going to talk a little college football here, Darren.
Okay, let's go.
How many days away are we? What's the score?
It's like 136, I think, is where we are. 136 days from kickoff.
News broke this week. In fact, I just saw it today that ESPN asked Oklahoma to move their home opener to a Friday night, August 30th. They're playing Temple. So the Oklahoma home opener, which they play a lot of 11 a.m. games, really early games, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they moved it to Friday night, August 30th. I was incredibly disappointed by this news because yep. Friday nights belong to what, Darren?
High school football.
And I'm assuming high school football is a big deal like it is in Louisiana up in Oklahoma.
I would assume it very much is. Absolutely.
So very disappointed, and ESPN seems to be the one that was pushing this.
Yep.
And what it comes down to is it's money. I think I read that ESPN was, we want OU to have a primetime game for their first game as a member of the SEC. Well, number one, yeah. it's not an SEC conference game.
Right, exactly.
They're playing Temple.
Yep.
Come on. Again, Darren, I don't want to belabor the point, but the greed of the TV networks is yep. just astounding.
And the fact that your point should not be overlooked, you know, obviously the point about high school football is a great point, but in addition to that, we're not even talking about an SEC conference game. We're moving it to a Friday night so people can watch the game and see the SEC logo on the 35-yard line. I mean, really, honestly, at the end of the day, that's the only difference in the opener this year and the opener last year when you're talking about a non-conference opener. You're moving it to a Friday night and interfering with high school football because there's going to be an SEC logo on each side of the field at the 35 or 20-yard line, whatever it is. I mean, that's the only difference.
Now, what I'm hearing from different Oklahoma sports writers who cover the Sooners is that this will not happen again in the season. So hopefully, hopefully we don't see that happen again.
Right.
I know in the past, the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey, has come out and said, we're not going to play on Friday nights because of high school football. So hopefully this is not something that's repeated.
Very much so. Hopefully that's the case.
Well, let's move on from celebrating to expressing our displeasure. Let's go down history lane. Darren, are you ready for this week in sports history?
In the 1984 NCAA Men's Basketball Championship, Georgetown faced off against Houston in a thrilling showdown. The stakes were high and the game lived up to its billing. Led by the legendary Patrick Ewing, Georgetown emerged victorious with an 84-75 win over Hakeem Olajuwon's Houston Cougars. The matchup was historic. It marked the first time an African-American head coach, John Thompson, led his team to an NCAA Division I title. Thompson's leadership and strategic prowess were instrumental in Georgetown's triumph. On the court, the battle between Ewing and Olajuwon captured the nation's attention. The two giants clashed relentlessly, showcasing their skills and determination. Georgetown's aggressive defense and rebounding ultimately tipped the scales in their favor. As the final buzzer sounded, Georgetown celebrated its first ever NCAA championship. The victory remains etched in basketball lore, a testament to the teamwork, talent, and the indomitable spirit of the Hoyas.
Oh, thank you.
In follow-up news from last week, the Tennessee women have announced a new head coach, Kim Caldwell from Parkersburg, West Virginia. Caldwell played her high school ball at Parkersburg South High School, played collegiately at Glenville State in West Virginia, a D2 school where she coached also for 7 years with a 191-24 record. They won the 2022 national championship. 3 years ago, she was named the Pat Summit Trophy for the Women's Basketball Coaches Association Coach of the Year.
Fitting.
In her 1 year at Marshall, she led the Thundering Herd to a 26-7 record, the Sun Belt Championship, and a berth in the NCAA tournament where they lost in the first round to Virginia Tech. Brandon, I know you're excited about this, and we're glad to have you back on. And you're excited for multiple reasons. Number one, it's Tennessee. Number two, Caldwell is from where you now live.
Exactly. What a small world. I mean, yeah. I'm here in the Vienna, Parkersburg area in West Virginia, and I teach at a school that's just right down the road from where she went to high school. It's crazy how that worked out.
That's awesome.
Now, I know last time I was on, we talked about who I thought would be good fits. I mentioned a few names, but it definitely wasn't Kim Caldwell. I mean, I saw that on the bottom line on ESPN. I was like, who is that? So I immediately got on my phone and Googled, and so far I am impressed, and I am so glad that Tennessee took a leap of faith and stepped outside of the box, stepped outside mm-hmm. of the program, I mean, and hired a coach like her. You know, her biggest knock is her lack of experience in D1 basketball. But like Ben said earlier, I mean, conference champions in her first year. And what's even more impressive is that she had an amazing career at a D2 school, head coaching career, 3 years at 7 years at Glenville State. You know, a lot of times when coaches progress, they might be a head coach at a D2 school, then become an assistant coach at a D1 college, right? But she jumped in right at as a head coach at a D1 school, Marshall, which is highly competitive conference. I mean, and turn that program, you know, complete 180 in one season. It's impressive. Her offense is fast. They shoot a lot of threes. They play like they remind me of like Press Virginia defense. I mean, they really hound the dribbler in this case. And I think that's the perfect style of play for SEC basketball. During a press conference, I think it was today or yesterday, they said, "Are you going to change your style of play?" And she was like, "I wouldn't be here if I'm going to change my style of play. Like it's going to work. It has worked. It's proven." And I think it's going to be a good fit for the style of play that most SEC teams do. I am so happy. I was, like I said, you know, I was taken aback at first because I knew it was going to be Kara Lawson. I knew they were going to hire her. Like mm-hmm. I was just like ready for it. And then when I saw that name, I wouldn't say I was disappointed by any means, but I was just kind of surprised. But man, she is, I'm looking forward to her turning this program around. One interesting thing, well, two things about her press conference. She addressed the elephant in the room. She said, "I am not Pat Summitt, and I will never be Pat Summitt." So I love how she's humble like that. But the other, most interesting thing to me about her contract is, if she wins a national championship, she is in her contract guaranteed to become the highest paid women's basketball coach in the country.
Wow.
That's pretty good incentive. Wow.
Yeah.
So they win the national championship in early June, roughly next year. By May 1st, she will be the highest paid coach in the country.
Wow.
Wow.
So is that in your contract, Darren? If we become the highest rated podcast.
Thankfully, it's not in Brandon's contract after the week he's had last week.
Yeah, Brandon, you've galvanized the Tennessee women's basketball
base. Exactly.
And I've, of course, got my Lady Vols hat.
Very nice touch. Very nice.
I'm not just a, you know, guy on here talking, saying that I like basketball, women's basketball. I really do.
Brandon, tell everybody about when you got that hat, because I thought that was a really cool story.
Oh, absolutely. So I bought this hat when my daughter was born. She just turned 8, so this is an old hat. But I was like, well, I've got a daughter now, and she's going to play for the Lady Vols, hopefully, so I might as well start nice. Now, get me a hat.
I love it.
But man, I am just so excited. Like, everywhere she has gone, she is a winner. Mm-hmm. I mean, she won a national championship in like five years or so. She won a national championship. So if she can do that at Tennessee, like say she wins a national championship in the next 5 years, like she'll be the greatest coach in the country.
Yep.
I mean, there's no doubting that. And hopefully she'll have a freaking 20-year career like Pat Summitt did. Another positive thing about her is, I don't want to sound, you know, ageist or whatever, but she's only 35 years old. I mean, she graduated high school in 2007. So, I mean, she's young. She's got a lot of years ahead of her, and hopefully a lot of good years wearing that powder blue and orange. Like, I mean, I just can't get over it. I am pumped. I know the season just ended, but I am ready for it to start again for sure.
And she obviously is not shy about taking on a challenge. She's just That's entered right. the SEC, where I think the best women's college coach is found, and that's Dawn Staley and what she's done at South Carolina.
Absolutely.
So I love the fact that Caldwell didn't shy away from that. Yep. It's going to be fun to watch and see how Tennessee responds to her and what they do. Now, Darren, I know you're a Vanderbilt fan, and Brandon is off the charts excited about this hire. So from your perspective, give us a little bit of your analysis on why is Caldwell a good fit for Tennessee?
Well, I tell you that I'm unexcited about the hire for obvious reasons. But I tell you a couple of things that really stood out to me because talking about how looking at how the Marshall program turned around in just 1 year under her coaching, a couple of things that stood out to me was the fact that their margin of victory doubled. It's not just wins and losses. When you kind of dig into those wins, their margin of victory doubled in the first year in her system, and their points per game went up almost 17 points a game.
Wow.
In just 1 year under her system, which means that it not only obviously is a system that works, but it's a system that players can jump into, understand, and obviously enjoy, because that's a key component of grabbing onto a system that quickly, that you not only do you understand it, but you got to kind of enjoy it, because that makes it really kind of click. And very obviously, her system that she runs does that. For those two numbers to really stand out like that, I'm thankful that Vanderbilt got Shea Ralph when they did, because it looks like we might be looking at some years where that Vanderbilt-Tennessee women's basketball game means what it used to a few years back when it was really an absolute fight. And, you know, regardless of who you're a fan of, whether it be Vanderbilt or Tennessee, that's good for the SEC when that game means something when it takes place, of when course, those two schools are elevated. That's a positive thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when Vanderbilt and Tennessee basketball are good, that's that's when the SEC is at its best.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, there's no denying that Tennessee, or excuse me, the SEC could be the best women's college basketball
conference. Absolutely.
They already pretty much are with South Carolina and LSU, but when you add in Tennessee as a close second to those two, or maybe hopefully surpass them eventually, it's exciting. It's exciting.
I love it for the conference. I love it for the sport. It's just going to be so surreal when Tennessee and LSU play. You got Coach Mulkey in the last, third of her career? And then you got this 35-year-old Kim Caldwell at Tennessee. And, you know, the torch eventually passes. And, I hope that she does well there.
Yeah, agree completely.
I saw a clip of her today meeting all the other head coaches from the various sports at Tennessee, and the way Rick Barnes approached her, and he shook her hand and gave her a big hug that was so cool to see. Saw her laughing and joking with Josh Heupel, and I mean it was just made me smile ear to ear. It was awesome to see. She fit right in with those guys.
I tell you what, it's hard for me to say this about somebody that coaches at Tennessee. I'll admit that. But I wouldn't care if I was the water polo coach at Tennessee. One of the first things I would do when I stepped onto campus is try to figure out how I could get 10 minutes with Rick Barnes every single week. Can I just have 10 minutes just to sit down and you just talk? I don't care if it's about your driveway. I don't, you just talk. If I can get 10 minutes, it's going to make me better. I want that 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, we will keep tabs as Kim Caldwell transitions to Tennessee and keep up with that. And and Brandon, I mean, I get you guys confused. I don't know why I get you confused, but Brandon, we will definitely be reaching out to you again with any news that comes out of Tennessee. You are our go-to person for Tennessee. So thank you for being on the show. I know your son had his first T-ball practice today, so you're a busy man.
Awesome. Yeah.
And so we appreciate you coming on, Brandon.
Awesome. Yes, thank you. Guys.
From Tennessee, we transition to two border states.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Kentucky to the north and Arkansas to the west.
Yep.
Big news out of both. As we reported last week, Eric Musselman was in talks with USC to leave Arkansas and take that head coaching position, which he has accepted. Musselman, 5 years at the University of Arkansas, a record of 111 wins, 59 losses, two Elite Eight appearances in 2021 and 2022, and a Sweet 16 appearance in 2023. Darren, we were shocked that Musselman was leaving Arkansas, but it set in motion some even bigger news. And that is John Calipari is finalizing a contract to coach Arkansas. He announced today that he is leaving Kentucky, saying that Kentucky needs a new voice. So a few statistics of Calipari's time at Kentucky, and then Darren, I want to hear your analysis about two seismic changes in the SEC. Calipari spent 15 years at Kentucky. He came there in 2009. He's leaving here at the end of the 2024 season. He was the Naismith Coach of the Year three times in his career so far. He was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2015. His overall record at Kentucky, 410 wins, 123 losses. He guided the Kentucky Wildcats to the 2012 National Championship. He was a four-time SEC Coach of the Year, took Kentucky to three Final Fours, I believe, or 2012, 2015, or maybe it was four. My notes are scrambled here, but a stellar career. And that's not even including the number of players that Calipari sent to the NBA.
Exactly.
A tremendous recruiter. Unfortunately, in the latter part of his time at Kentucky, didn't always translate into championships, postseason success. So, Darren, as you look at this move, and honestly, I shouldn't say that, should I? we're honest about everything on this
show. That's right. That's exactly right.
Darren, I never thought I'd see the day when a Kentucky coach would leave Lexington to go to Fayetteville.
No.
So what do you think?
I will start by adding to what you said. I never thought I would see the day where a Kentucky coach left Lexington to go anywhere else in the SEC. You know, I can't think of many places even outside of the SEC. You know, you might, if it somewhere was a dream job, if somebody wanted to go to like a UCLA or, you know, a Georgetown, maybe not in today's basketball, but there was a time somewhere like that, you could maybe kind of see it. But I mean, can you imagine outside of this, which we still can't really wrap our brains around, there ever being a time where Coach X, whoever it is, left Lexington to go to Fayetteville, Arkansas, to go to Knoxville, to head to Tuscaloosa, to even to head to Gainesville? That's just, it's just, you never, ever thought you would hear that happen anywhere else in the conference. I think one of the things that's clear from it is you have to kind of wonder if John Calipari is also at a place where obviously he's not content with where things are. You can't coach on that level for that long without having a competitive streak. You want to win. You want to stack up championships, conference and national championships. You want to be the best in the business. I mean, that's you can't coach on that level without having that drive and having that internal push. So there's got to be some of that going on, that for whatever reason, even if he thinks, well, I can't really figure out why, but there's got to be a reason, maybe it'll work somewhere else. So he's willing to give that a shot. To me, that's the only thing that makes me kind of think or makes me go, okay, I can see it. Still doesn't make sense to me, but I can see it. Because if you think about it, he's headed to Arkansas, which has what? Not on the level of a Kentucky, not what goes on in Lexington, but has, from my understanding, from what I've read, especially over the last couple of days, a pretty deep NIL deal going on and a rabid fan base.
They got chicken money.
Yeah, that's right. They got chicken money. They got Walmart money. There's a lot of stuff going on there. So I can see where, even if obviously it's not Kentucky, there may be a part of him that says, for whatever reason, I've got to figure it out at some point. But for whatever reason, it's just not working in Kentucky anymore. So I'm going to go give it a try here. Rabid fan base, great NIL school will give me whatever resources is needed to be successful. That's been proven. I'll go give it a shot. You know, whoever thought that a job like this would be open. So I'll give it a shot. I can see that. Outside of that, there's nothing about this that makes sense. I don't get it. I don't understand Musselman going to USC. I don't understand leaving a job like Arkansas to head somewhere like USC. There's nothing about that that makes sense to me. There's not a way that you can convince me that he thinks he can win more there at a higher level. He might ultimately win more on a conference level, but not on a higher level. I don't think he's going to, we're going to see USC having, you know, three straight years of Elite Eights and a Final Four. I don't think he'll ever attain that at USC, and he had that shot at Arkansas. And as far as John Calipari leaving Kentucky, it is obvious something was off. I don't know if it was, you know, I saw somebody when it was announced that there were rumblings that between contract incentives, actual money, and like NIL that would come to the coach, not, you know, that it was going to be somewhere upwards or in the neighborhood of a $14, $15 million a year deal that he would have the possibility of having at Arkansas. And a Kentucky fan who obviously is not a happy fan base. Some are, some aren't. This person obviously wasn't, said, oh, good. So at least you got $1 million per out of bounds play you'll see during the season. So I think something wasn't connecting. Something wasn't working. We've talked about it throughout the season. There never seemed the hallmarks of a John Calipari team, that fluid, that movement, that coming together at the right time. And it wasn't just this season. So I get him wanting to do something different, and I do think he's right. It obviously was time for a change, but the whole thing is still extremely, extremely odd. A Kentucky head coach left to go to Arkansas. Just let that sink in. I mean, really, honestly, that's like us announcing that Nick Saban, and this, I don't mean this to be ugly. Here, I tell you what, I'll say it about Vanderbilt. I almost said Missouri, but I don't want to make Missouri fans mad. Nick Saban left Alabama and headed Missouri because they've had a little bit of success. They're moving up a little bit. They have some things going. Nick Saban decided, I'm kind of finished at Alabama. I'm going to head to Missouri to coach for the next 5 years. Doesn't make any sense, but that's kind of the parallel of what we're talking about to me.
Darren, you said something just seemed off, and I think that's such an appropriate way to put it. Mm-hmm. Coach Cal came in, and he just lit up Lexington, and there was so much excitement and so many wins and so much success. And you see some of these more recent losses, particularly in the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
Something was just off. The talent was still coming, but something just wasn't clicking. I think Kentucky fans should look back on the time with Calipari and recognize the success that happened, not just on the court, but I was reading various Kentucky sports writers talking about the things that Calipari did for people throughout the state of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not, you hate that something was off that precipitated this move, but it's important to recognize what happened during this time. And yeah, there were down moments more recently, mm-hmm. but there were a lot of good moments, and Kentucky should fans should remember that and celebrate that. Mm-hmm. Even as the university moves on to find a new coach, he did add another national championship to their trophy case.
Absolutely.
And that's a tough thing to do. Yep. So I think Calipari, you know, he's one of the great coaches. I think he'll do well at Arkansas. He'll re-energize that base.
Absolutely.
Which Musselman did 5 years ago. I mean, yeah. Musselman is no slouch of a coach himself.
No, that's exactly right.
So I think this is actually going to be a positive for both Arkansas and Kentucky.
Yeah, agree completely.
So let's talk a little bit about the names that are surfacing in the Kentucky coaching search. And we're just basing this off of what sports right. writers are reporting. We don't have a direct access to the Kentucky AD Mitch mm-hmm. Barnhart cell phone. And if we did, he probably wouldn't answer our phone call.
if we did get through, he would change his number. Cause how did these people get my number? That's
I mean, we still can't get media credentials to SEC Media Days.
That's exactly right.
Someone out there, tell Greg Sankey we're legit.
That's right. Hashtag Sankey invite us. That's what we're looking for. If you could get that going, that'd be great.
So a couple of names. Darren, you want to go into the list?
Let's throw out the top three, and then we can talk about those, and I'll throw out some kind of outliers that haven't been talked about, but have been kind of thrown out there. If they get turned down by these kind of obvious top three, these might be ones that are considered. But the top three, I think, truthfully, are kind of pretty obvious. Well, actually, before we even get into those, Jay Wright was a name that's come up quite a bit, and I think he was asked about that on TV. Is that correct? And gave that a pretty sound. Like, no, not gonna.
No. You know, Jay Wright, he's a legend at Villanova with yep. what he did, and he's got a great gig right now with what he's doing. He doesn't want to walk into the pressure of Lexington.
No. And you know, we talked about when he walked away from Villanova that it was a sign of to me, you know, the game changing. And so he's not going to, you know, jump into an even bigger pressure cooker with things being even crazier. So, but obviously that name is off the list. But the three that seem to be getting the most chatter are Nate Oates, Dan Hurley, and Scott Drew. And obviously, if you're a Kentucky fan, I can see either of the three of those making you go, oh, well, okay. I can, you know. But honestly, for me, no dog in the hunt. Nate Oates probably seems to be the most obvious fit to me. I want to get your thoughts on that, because I have concerns about Dan Hurley and Scott Drew as just kind of fits in the conference and at Kentucky. Obviously, I guess Nate Oates is the best fit because he's already within the conference. But I can't – to me – it would be even more shocking than Musselman heading to USC if Oates walked away from Alabama to go to Kentucky. I know it's Kentucky, so that all bets are off when it's the Kentucky job. And I get that. Just like we talked about before we started recording, it's the national championship, and there are just as many people talking about John Calipari headed to Arkansas and the Kentucky job as there were talking about the actual game. It's a big deal. The Kentucky job is the job. But what Nate Oates is doing at Alabama, you kind of have your thing that you're building. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. I don't even know if they offer it to him. He seems to be the best fit.
Let's talk a little bit about Nate Oates. He did put out a announcement on Twitter saying he was committed to staying at Alabama. He's got an $18 million buyout, which Calipari's was going to be, what, $33
million? $33 million, exactly. But
not if he leaves on his own. So suddenly Kentucky doesn't have to worry about that money. And another interesting aspect to what you're talking about, Kentucky being Kentucky, every coach has that dream job out there.
Absolutely.
I'm completely convinced the only school that Kim Mulkey would have left Baylor for was LSU.
Absolutely agree.
And so the fact that we're talking about Kentucky, which on the day of the men's national championship game was front and center news. More people seem to be talking about what's happening at Kentucky. Cal's leaving. Absolutely. Who are they going to get? Then the game that shows you how big the Kentucky brand is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So
I would be very shocked if Nate Oates went there. Right now he's in a position where, you know, they are ecstatic about him in Tuscaloosa.
Yep, absolutely.
Final Four appearance for the first time ever.
Yep, that's exactly right.
The other two on your list, Dan Hurley, he was asked after the national championship win, and he made some jokes. He said, no, I can't afford a divorce right now, things like that.
Yeah.
And What's he going to do when that amount of money is thrown at him is a good question. I think, Darren, Scott Drew is not the most exciting pick here. Mm-hmm. But out of the three you mentioned, I'd I'd probably guess he's probably the most likely out of those three.
I would agree. I would. He's had success, obviously, at Baylor. I have concerns about what he's done at Baylor working somewhere like Kentucky. If I'm a Kentucky fan, that's something that stands out to me. But you can say that about any coach. So what does that, I mean, what does that really mean at the end of the day? I think no one would look at that. If that's who Kentucky targets and goes after, no one looks at that and go, oh, well, that was a dumb hire. You know, it's going to be praised as a good hire because he's been successful at Baylor. He's done it well, but you know, one of the things you have to talk about with any of these coaches that you're looking at, there is an intense level at Kentucky that can take a man down as a head coach. And we've seen it happen. No matter what level of success you've had somewhere else, and we've seen it happen. It is a machine there because it is Kentucky. And to me, that would be my only concern. And just to throw a couple of names, I'm just going to run out a quick list just to throw another few names out there. Mark Pope at BYU has been a name that if they don't kind of get those top two or three that they're looking at, that's been a name that's come up a lot. It's going to be a possibility. Bruce Pearl at Auburn, you know, the success he's had at both Tennessee and Auburn, how does his name not come up? I don't think that's very likely, but I understand it. Coming up, TJ Otzelberger, I believe I'm saying that right, at Iowa State, and Brad Underwood at Illinois. Not a whole lot of chatter about those names, but still those are names. Those are kind of the ones I've seen. I would call that like that second tier level. Those are names that that come up. Any of those names that stand out to you?
No. I was thinking about Billy Donovan, though.
Oh, that's a great call.
Kentucky's tried with him in the past. He went to Florida, a football school, won two national championships at Florida. He said all the right things when he was asked about today. I'm committed to the Chicago Bulls, right. Blah, 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 blah. But he didn't really shoot it down. And so I wonder with how the game's changed, being Lexington, NIL, the support there. Donovan intrigues me a little bit. I would be shocked if Hurley leaves.
I agree completely.
And I don't think that Scott Drew would energize the base. I think he'd have success there because he's a good coach.
Right.
I mean, you can't argue with what he's done at Baylor. But
right.
He's been at Baylor over 20 years. Is they really going to be able to get him to uproot his family and go to Lexington?
Exactly.
Where if you don't have success in the first 2 years, you're moving again. I mean, Baylor's never going to fire him.
Right. That's exactly right. I guess the real question, you know, Billy Donovan, that's a great, great pull. I hadn't even thought about that, truthfully. And I will say, you know, you're right. He has said all the right things, if, you know, responding to that to the press conference. But, you know, I believe it was Nick Saban that was fully committed to the Miami Dolphins. So just throwing that out there. But it was Alabama that was calling. So, you know, and now it's going to be Kentucky. It's calling if that's what happens. You know, if you're Mitch Barnhart, does this have to be a home run? Does this have to be a splashy Dan Hurley, Nate Oates type hire? Or can he get someone that may not necessarily energize the fan base, but you can look at it and say, okay, I can see where this guy's going to be successful. And that kind of pulls the fan base along, even if it's not a Calipari level hire, it can still pull the fan base along and get them to like, okay, I mean, this guy's going to be successful. I see it. Can he afford to do that in this position?
I think, you know, we were talking about the Tennessee women, and that's kind of what they did with their hire. Yeah. And if you look at what Alabama did football wise, taking Kalen DeBoer, who had a couple good years at Washington, mm-hmm. but before that, did not have a whole lot of big major college Right. He had a lot of success, but not at that level.
Right. Right.
And so it's realistic. But I think that, I tell you, Lexington's tough. This is one of those, the expectations are off the charts for this job. Yeah. So you think about people in the, can they handle the pressure they're stepping into?
Exactly.
And you're following a legend.
Yep. And he'll be seen as that. You know, you were talking about that earlier. It'll take a little bit of time, but it won't, to me, I think it'll take a few years, but these last two or three years will easily be forgotten. And people will talk about what John Calipari did in his first decade at Kentucky, as opposed to what these last two or three years have looked like. And I think he'll be treated like that. It'll just, they got to get over the last two or three years first before. Yeah. That's time's got to create some time to let those wounds heal. And then it'll go away pretty quickly.
You know, a coach that is at Kentucky that doesn't win a national title is somewhat of an outlier.
Yep.
There's been a few of those, but you look, of course, Joe B. Hall, and I'm not even going back to Rupp, but Joe B. Hall, you look at, Rick Pitino, Tubby Smith, John mm-hmm. Calipari. Mm-hmm. And there were some misses in there as well. And I think that's what is concerning to Kentucky fans. And that's the pressure that Barnhart is under to, it doesn't have to be a big name home run, Darren, but I think you better be able to have a guy that's got a history of winning.
Yeah. Agree completely. I agree. And to me that I think, The Kentucky fan base is a rabid fan base, but I think they're a smart fan base as well. So I think even if it's not a guy that's going to, you know, not be Musselman, you know, up in the seats with his shirt off, you know, that kind of energizing the fan base, but you can look at his track record and say, okay, this guy's going to bring a national championship here. I think the fan base will roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree completely. So as news comes out, we will try to keep you in the loop. Even if we hear something, we may release a special episode just talking about Kentucky's hire if there's one that takes place before our next episode comes out.
Absolutely. So
let's talk a little bit more about basketball before we sign off, Darren. March Madness was a blast, as it always Absolutely. Is. The tournament is always fun. Men and women's tournament, what great times. We did a bracket challenge for the men's tournament. We might want to look at adding the women's tournament next year.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But thank you for all of you who participated in our bracket challenge. We had the biggest turnout we've ever had for the show. And, Darren, we have an undisputed champion who is
correct. Well, it's ESPN fan 3573538675309. You did that, and I'm going to use it. I love it a lot. There are
Tommy Two-Tone.
That's right. But there were two ESPN fans at the top, the only two people in our group that picked UConn, interestingly enough. Everyone else picked someone different. It was kind of tight between the two of them and Trevor Perkins, who finished in fourth because he had Purdue as his national champion, but he ended up in fourth. You, sir, ended up in third. You held at the top.
I was that close. One sprained ankle from Jamel Shedd.
That's right.
destroyed me. Just destroyed me.
It absolutely took you down. You can't recover from this one on the bike, on the sideline. You can't. And then PGC Bossier picks one, ended up in fifth. So that rounds out our top five. So we will get ESPN, and it's the one that starts with 557, blah, 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 to contact us. And we'll talk more about that, about having a prize and who that is in a future episode. But thank you so much for being our biggest group ever, and congratulations to, because it was a dominant win with the 1,300 points. It was a dominant win. So nicely done.
Well done. Well done. Thank you for watching. Remember, new episodes drop typically on Tuesdays, but when there's national championship games, you can count on that episode coming
That's
out
right.
on Wednesday, like this one. Regardless, new episodes every week. We look forward to you being a part of the show. be sure to hit that like, subscribe button so you get notified about everything that's happening with the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast.
Absolutely.
So until next time, y'all take care.
Have a great week.
Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is so important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or a text to our text line 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast. See you next week.